Welcome to this episode of the Casual Shooters Podcast, your premier podcast for the casual shooter. Today I have a special guest. He is the interim Area 4 director. So if you would, join me in welcoming to the show, Mr. Ken Cobb. How you doing, Ken?
I'm doing just fine. Sitting out here in stormy Texas.
Stormy. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Texas, you know, it's pretty exciting in the springtime.
Where in Texas are you?
Right now, I'm in Waxahachie, Texas.
Okay.
Yeah. That's his home of the largest gun range in North Texas. ATTS.
If you would, Ken, go ahead and introduce yourself real quick.
Okay. Ken Cobb, like I say, interim Area 4 director. Long time shooter. I've been a life member since sometime in the 2000s. Put on quite a few area matches, section matches, bigger matches. I'm an open shooter. Now I'm a limited optics shooter. Professionally, I'm a retired chef. Been in the culinary field and hospitality business for since 89. So I guess I'm going to say 32 years. I've worked all over the country, managed all kinds of businesses. Last 15 years, self-employed as a caterer. And the last 4 years as a rancher / dishwasher for my own event center and Airbnb. And I got offered a lot of money to walk away, and so I did. So I moved to a golf course in McKinney, Texas. I play golf 3 days a week and try to shoot the rest of the time. And then meanwhile, try to help USPSA.
Golfing's a different type of shooting.
Sure is, but there's a whole lot of similarities.
Yep, that's what I mean.
It's just mental.
All right, Ken, I know we only have about, an hour to chat?
Yeah, I'm sorry, my schedule, I messed up. It's all on me. I'd love to give you more time. Maybe we'll do a part one, part two, if you ever want to hear from me again.
Okay, I'm going to do a quick... five set of questions. Everybody get to know you, and then we'll move into the meat of the subject.
Okay.
Favorite movie?
The Cook, the Thief, His Wife, and Her Lover.
The Cook, the Thief, His Wife, and His Lover?
Her Lover.
Her Lover, okay.
You'll have to look that one up. It's a real obscure avant-garde movie that came out in 1989. And I'm a movie nut, and it was the most bizarre, weirdest movie you'll ever see in that David Lynch tradition. And the costumes were done by Jean-Paul Gaultier, and it was a culinary-based movie, and it was just amazing. And a favorite movie, hands down.
Okay, it actually sounds familiar. I feel like I've heard of it before. So
once you see it, you're going, oh, you don't forget it.
All right. I have learned that many people don't read books anymore. If you've read a book, which is your favorite?
Okay. I have probably read close to 2,000 books, and I have documented all of them. So my number one favorite book is Atlas Shrugged by Ayn Rand, as far as personal development. And on the other side, I am a huge fan of military sci-fi. John Ringo, David Weber, those guys. And of course, Frank Herbert. Dune is the shit, if I can say that. It is just an amazing world-building book. Just love it. I went ahead and listened to it again after seeing the latest version of the movie, and it's just even better. So,
okay. Military sci-fi.
Yeah. There's a lot of it out there. Amazon self-publishing. So I read about 3 books a week. It's fun. It's real escapism.
Okay. I don't know if you're into superheroes. I am not. But if you are, who's your favorite superhero? If not, who's your favorite historical figure?
I don't have a favorite historical figure. If it had to be a superhero, it would be Doctor Strange.
Is he a superhero?
To me, he is.
Okay.
World.
I have no idea.
You don't know Doctor Strange?
Only by name. I don't know anything about him.
You have so much catching up to do.
And not enough time.
No, yeah, exactly. Not enough time. It's bad enough. I've got to do this sitting in a parking lot outside of an audiologist office, but that's just not enough time. All right, so hit me.
All right. Favorite gun, favorite caliber. Do not have to be married together.
Oh, my favorite gun is my 38 Super Comp open gun. Cannot play with it enough.
Who makes it? What?
Oh, it's an Infinity Firearms. I've had a few from other makers, but nothing touches an Infinity in the open gun division. Of course, now limited optics and shoot an Infinity.
Okay, so you're just Infinity across the board.
Yeah, pretty much. Once you go to a 1.5 pound single stage, single action trigger, it's really hard to go to a striker fired. I have them. I have them all. But I keep going back to that Infinity.
So
I got them all. I collect everything, but I just go back to that style. Like 2011, I just can't get enough of it.
Is 38 Super Comp your favorite caliber?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. 1,450 feet per second. It'll solve all your problems.
You're a chef. What's your favorite dish to prepare?
Don't have one because I've spent most of my career as a caterer. I can make anything, cook anything, bake anything. I don't like any of it. Life would be better if I never, ever had to cook again. But I can't get that lucky. People, oh, you have to make this. You have to do this. I have no favorites. I am probably the one dish that's made me the most money that I will actually still eat is my prime rib. So that's about it. I'm a foodie, but somebody else has got to cook it now. I'm done.
So what's your trick to prime rib? I just learned how to cook it properly. So I finally, after 3 years of cooking it, I finally came up with my magic recipe. What is the trick to you?
All right. So it'll take me an hour to explain that. That may be a whole culinary episode.
Well, you know what Cliff's Notes are, right?
I do know what Cliff Notes are.
Give me the Cliff Notes version.
They call me the shooting chef, so it's there. That is my handle. Rest the meat. Can't stress that enough. You want to get the whole prime rib, and you want to, it comes in a vacuum pack bag when you get it. If you're going to Sam's or Costco or commercial place, buy it in that vacuum pack bag, put it in the refrigerator, and leave it there for 2 weeks. 2 weeks. Do not touch it. 2 weeks. If you can't do 2 weeks, do at least a week. But 2 weeks is better. That is probably called wet aging. Wet aging is where your tenderness and flavorness comes from. After you've done that part, pull it out, dry it off, let it come to room temperature. Season it up. All it needs is salt, pepper, a little bit of thyme. I like to put a little Worcestershire sauce on it and garlic. Throw it in the oven. I cook it low and slow. Low and slow, 280-300 degrees. I'd use a convection oven, and it's usually done in slightly under 3 hours because I'm cooking about a 16-18 pound roast. You want to cook it to an internal temperature of 125 degrees. Pull it out, stick it somewhere nice and quiet, and let it rest. It needs to rest at least 15 minutes. Half hour would be best, and then you will have perfect prime rib.
Okay,
now you're making me hungry.
You just don't want to cook it.
I just don't want to do it anymore, but I do love my prime rib. Because nobody else does it better than I do. So it's arrogance, but it is what it is. We all like to think whatever we do, that one thing, we are the best. But I'll have to admit, it's made me a whole lot of money. So I got to figure it out.
Well, everybody likes prime rib.
I wish they didn't like it well done, but yeah.
Yeah, that's blasphemy.
It is, yes. But I got to be nice to my aunt. She likes it well done. So I get really end cap. And the best part is the chain. People don't ever eat that part. All right. What else you got?
All right.
We can do a whole show on culinary arts. Easy.
Right. All right. So you said in your intro that you've been shooting for a long time. When did you find USPSA?
I found USPSA. I first heard about it in 2004. First started shooting it about 2004, 2005. Got real serious in 2006. Was an IDPA shooter first and transitioned to USPSA and really never looked back. IDPA, in my opinion, is a great feeder sport for USPSA, but USPSA really ruins you for IDPA. Argue with me all you want, but that's just my opinion. Made Master and Limited first in 2009, and then real soon after that, made Master and Open, and just never got GM. And boy, howdy, I tried. I just couldn't get there.
Did you take any classes with anybody?
I have taken classes. You know, I love it. My first instructor was Matt Burkett.
Way back
in the day, Matt Burkett. And then I've taken two classes with a guy out of Houston named Gordon Carroll, who's just a good fundamental shooting instructor. And I'm very, very fortunate to live in an area, the Dallas-Fort Worth area in our club, where we have some GMs, open shooters, who are really, really good and are very good at breaking things down and teaching you and showing you the basics. And once you master the basics and you get past the mental aspects and reading the Basham book, Mental Shooting, and getting through Anderson's book and understanding to do what we do is more than just aiming a gun. It's 80% mental. And once you master the mental aspect of this and understand that shooting is truly subconscious, and then you go into the wonderful world of Zen and let things happen. And it is, when it happens, it really is amazing. Sadly, it just doesn't happen enough.
All right. So you said you've also done some match directing and other stuff. So if you found USPSA in 2006, how long did it take you to decide you wanted to do these other things?
Within a year, I was match directing and I put on the 2009 Area 4 Championship.
And where was that at?
That we did that one at the Double Tap Ranch in Wichita Falls, Texas. So we did it was a group of us. It's always a group of us that did it. So we did 2009 and then 2011 and then 2015. And then I kind of helped in the background with last year's Area 4 Championship. So been there, done that.
So between 2015 and 2023, what were you doing?
Working a lot, working a whole lot. But I still shot. I just didn't travel as much. Did a whole lot of traveling between 2009 and 2015. A ton of traveling. Shot matches all over the country. It was awesome. When Tulsa was having its heyday at the USSA range, shot the Nationals there. Went and shot production Nationals at PASA. Shot matches all over Texas, Oklahoma, Arkansas, Nebraska. Shooting the Hornady Area 3 matches, Area 1 match. Went to Homestead, shot Nationals there, shot Steel Challenge there. I just just went everywhere. Do a lot of shooting. Was probably at one time shooting about 50,000 rounds a year. Now I'm not quite there anymore.
Now, were you driving back then or were you flying?
I drove everywhere. I do not fly. I hate flying. I hate it with a passion.
And why is that?
Well, I just don't like being cooped up. And airplanes are just cooped up. And I'm a little bit claustrophobic. And I just had a very bad experiences, two of them on airplanes. And I just decided, you know, I'd rather die with my feet on the ground instead of in the air. So that's just me. So I drive. I had a conversion van and drove that thing everywhere. Hit 16 states one summer, shooting everywhere. Going up to, I think it was Rockford, Illinois, shooting matches.
Now, did it have wall-to-wall plush carpet, and were you playing 70s porn music?
I did play 70s music. It did have a pull-out sofa in the back. it did have some weird lighting in it, I'll admit. It had these great big plushy captain chairs. It was amazingly comfortable. It was hideously ugly, but boy, was it comfortable. And they don't make things that comfortable anymore. So I certainly got my money's worth out of it.
Everything's made a lot cheaper nowadays.
Cheaper, thinner, harder. My butt don't like it.
Exactly. All right. So at some point you volunteered to be the interim Area 4 director, correct?
Correct. You know, Mel, bless his heart, just didn't get off to a good start. And I was contemplating, I'd contemplating being the area director several times over the last 10, 15 years. But most of the time people talk me out of it. And then somebody else steps up and says, you know what, I want to do this. I can take it to the next level. Let me do it. Says, okay, I'll give my support and let him go. But Area 4 has just been badly represented for a very long time. And so it's just like, okay, so there's a group of us that are very active shooters and very, very passionate about USPSA. And all right, so we're going to step up. And Mel, I can say, Mel came in and says, you know, let me do it. Let me do it. Okay, you know, we'll do it. But none of us knew that he didn't have his RO card at the time. The board gave him a, what do you want to call it, a variant? I don't agree
mulligan.
With that, but a mulligan, yeah. I don't agree with that, but they did it. But nevertheless, the asterisk was there. And it was basically tainted. And it's just sad the way it went down. Mel is a good guy. He cares a great deal about USPSA. He's incredibly passionate about it. And so it's just, maybe he'll run again someday. Maybe. I don't know what he's going to do. It was just an unfortunate bit of knowledge that he didn't really have, that he had to be an RO to be a area director. And so he decided to step down. Frank and Ben formed, or were asked to form, they were really the only two that could do it, formed the committee to search. Frank was kind enough to share his story the other day as to how, because people are really upset with me. And they don't say, how in the world did this guy get the job? Frank was kind enough to say, and it came down to, they asked people put up some other names. So it was about five guys that were put up for Area 4 director. They had a standardized questionnaire they sent out. I was included in the list, and I was the only one that got the questionnaire back on time. They had a very tight timeline to get the decision made. We did the interview. Okay. That's just how it worked out. And that's how I got the position. I have submitted my signatures to run in the special election in June. There's going to be three candidates running. Be interesting to see how all that goes down. My position is I'm going to do what I can now, and where things stand at the start of the election, which is actually May 15th, I will then decide if I will try to continue my work with USPSA through the election, or sit it out, let the election happen, or back out. We'll let it play out and let the members decide what they want to do. I'm talking to people every day. This is not a part-time job. This is a full-time job.
Yep.
And people really seem to think that there's 800 hours in a day and 1,000 hours in a week. I can tell you right now, there's only two area directors right now that are technically retired. That's Area 4 and Area 1. Area 1 is working on stuff every day. And I'm working on some stuff and talk every day. Spending way too much time defending my positions, but it is what it is. We talk to people. I went in this past weekend and worked the Area 4 Steel Challenge. I got to talk to people, meet shooters, see the next generation, see the next generation of just amazing 22s. I was really enamored by the firearms I got to see that I had never seen before. So there's some neat stuff out there. So as far as that's the last time I got here, and I am a very forward, blunt person. I don't sugarcoat things. And the nature of coming out of a kitchen for 28 years is you get the job done. We don't spend all our time sitting around a table talking about it. We're very much, at least I am, action-driven. I don't want to talk about it. We're going to do it. What's the problem? Let's fix it. Let's move on to the next one. Let's fix it. We spend way too much time talking, and we need to do more time acting and taking action. It may not be the right action. It may not be a popular action, but at least we're going to try to fix things. We're going to try to address things. Beating the bush and just talking stuff to death is just, I can't do it. Can I do it? Won't do it. So I'm basically making my own agenda and trying to push issues out there and bring attention to what I think needs to be done. Try to communicate with the other area directors and really try to communicate with my section coordinators and club managers. I send out emails every week. I tried to have an Area 4 page, basically an unofficial members page, but that has turned into a disaster. Keyboards make it real easy to say ugly things, and I do not like people being ugly. Don't tolerate it. I have a very short fuse about that. So I'll talk to anybody. Bring it on. Let's talk. If you got great ideas, share it with me. Put in a request for agenda items for the April board meeting. These are things that I want addressed, but I put it out to my section coordinators and club managers. What do y'all want to see addressed? Because I'm your representative. Tell me what you want me to address. I'll do the best I can to get them addressed. People want us to be transparent, trying to get things as transparent as we can get it. But I do believe there needs to be conditions on that transparency. I've rattled on forever, so I'll try to keep the scope of our conversation a little more narrow.
So what do you think are some limitations on transparency?
Transparency is you're working in the open, right? There are things that can be discussed out in the open, and there are some things that absolutely cannot be talked about out in the open. And we can't seem to agree on that. We cannot seem to agree that employee issues must stay protected, beginning to end and forever until the end of time. We can never talk about employment-related issues or human resource-related issues. People want us to loudly talk about and discuss actions against employees, other directors. We can't do that. That will always stay in executive session. And we spend a lot of time in executive session talking about these issues. And people say, well, how can you possibly spend 6 hours talking about, you know, member discipline? Well, you saw the list of member discipline issues that we have to deal with. You know why? We have to do it, and we can't do it publicly. For members and for staff, employees, and directors. We don't really have any director problems, but staff we have to protect, and members we have to protect. So that stays privileged. Some of the finance stuff I would like to see come out in the open, but I'm not quite sure how we can do that. We have problems.
It's a nonprofit, so what? I understand a business that is for profit. They're trying to maintain some secrecy on what they're doing and how they're building their business. But with a nonprofit that's the members are the shareholders, other than contracts with certain people, things like that, I don't understand what is so secret about the financials.
There's nothing secret. There's nothing secret. I promise you, there's nothing secret.
Okay.
And remember, I've only done this for 3 weeks, so I don't have access to a whole lot of history. But my problem, the reason why I don't want to, it comes across wrong. I'm not very good at explaining these things. But the finance piece of paper, like the P&L that I just saw, I would never release because it doesn't come with a commentary. So when a CEO gives his shareholder report, he puts out the P&L, puts out the value, and then he gives commentary why things are the way they are. We're not doing that. So if we just throw our P&L out there, which fine, go ahead and do that, you're going to see numbers that make zero sense. I can't explain why certain line items have just these astronomical numbers attached to it. And then I'll ask a question and they'll say, oh, well, that's 10 years worth of expenses. Well, why are there 10 years worth of expenses on this, you know, one line item? I don't understand. So this is a 2023 P&L. What is this? So I don't know why things are the way they are, but as part of that responsibility that we have, we really should not be releasing inaccurate P&Ls and finance statements. It'll just create more problems.
I don't think anybody would disagree with you on that. Nobody wants anything out there that is inaccurate, but I mean, I haven't been around nearly as long as you, but we've both been around the last couple of years. And this is what we've been hearing for the last couple of years. Do you know how much progress they've made on correcting that stuff?
By my looking at it, I would say none.
Okay.
And I don't mean, it's hard because, you're kind of throwing people under the bus. And I hate doing that. But the facts are what they are. The numbers are not coming out when they're supposed to come out. The numbers are not truly representing the departments they're supposed to be representing. National budgets are not being kept and honored. Line items, expenses are not being controlled. They're not being managed. At the same time, we're not getting the reports that we need so that we can go to these department heads and we can go to these batch directors and go, okay, here's a line item. Why this expense? What can we do to reduce this expense? That's what needs to happen. And we truly are having those conversations. Maybe we can have more of them. And I'm going to vote for a live stream for the next meeting. I don't know it's going to go very well, but I'll vote for it, see what happens. Somebody has to put it up as an agenda item for discussion. I've put four items up on the agenda for this coming meeting. You know, finances are not one of them. I'm not on the finance committee. I'm not on any committees. I've asked to be put on some committees, but man, I guess maybe my status is not such that they want me on any committees. So I do ask a lot of questions. And then I'm pretty honest about that. I have issues. And I want these issues addressed. And I want to know why we're not solving things. And I'm making a lot of noise. So I'm doing what I can. I don't know what else I can do. So ask me another one, buddy.
All right. Now, well, continuing on that same line, when Scott first came in and he did that, he was rattling some cages like it sounds like you're trying to do, and it didn't work in his favor.
No, and I don't know the history of that. I admittedly, like so many of USPSA, I really don't give a crap about what the board does because the board does not affect my going out shooting weekends with my buddies. And that's my social life. That's my fun. I really don't care. Well, I didn't care. I do now, but I was one of those guys that didn't care. I put on my match. I handled my area matches. I went to the matches I wanted to shoot. I did what I wanted to do. I had fun. I didn't have any problems. Yes, you start hearing these rumors and you start seeing things online and you start questioning things. It's like, what's going on? There's definitely been some issues these last couple of years. And to be honest with you, I don't know that any of us will ever get the full picture. Because everybody, there's the left side, right side, and the truth.
Yep.
Nobody's going to agree on what's what.
Yep. Agree.
So I don't know how we're going to get through this, to be honest with you. I don't know how we're going to get through the Arnberg situation. I've got all kinds of issues with a lot of it, but I really don't know how we're going to get through it. Right now it's in the hands of lawyers, and we have a little subcommittee that's putting questions to these lawyers, trying to figure out how we can move forward. I do not know if Scott's going to make it back on the board. We haven't gotten that far in the discussion. It's not that easy.
Well, I I'm not even talking about that, Ken. What I'm alluding to.
The finance stuff.
Yeah. Well, hold on. Let me explain, and then you can reply.
Okay.
We know from the minutes, and you've stated in your Facebook Live that you've read the minutes, so you're at least familiar with what I'm going to say. Yeah. And that is, there were some things that were passed with the board last summer that they were going to do financially to help the organization that Scott was a part of. I mean, that's his everyday life. The president didn't want to do it, so Scott made a motion to remove the president and put someone else there. And Layton turned around. He called that motion out of order, made a motion to remove Scott from the finance committee, and it was voted in. Now, how that wasn't out of order, I don't know, but that's another discussion altogether. You know what I mean? But right. That's what I'm. And then he got removed from the finance committee because he made a motion that was unpopular. That's what I'm alluding to. You're rattling cages. Okay. And the board didn't like it back then. If they're not putting you on committees now, do you think that maybe your cage rattling is going to end up poorly?
I don't think so. I think it's too early to say, and it's because we don't have those board members that were in place. We have a relatively new board. I think there's 4 of us just in the last 4 months. And so there's a lot of freshness there. I'm hopeful. I've got some conspiracy theories that I want to see if they're going to play out. I'm kind of seeing a pattern. Will it happen to me? I hope not. But probably. In all honesty, I'm surprised I'm still on the board.
Okay. So what is Ken Cobb's idea of the number one priority for USPSA?
All right. To handle this delicately. My priorities, again, this, you're asking me what my priorities are. And my biggest concern is that we operate above board, obviously, and in compliance with all federal and state reporting rules.
Okay.
We're not doing that. And it has never been done. Why? I don't know. Attorney Jim brought it up last year and earlier this year. And he was correct. USPSA has made a grave error. It can be fixed. It's going to take time and a little bit of money. But nobody currently on the board or working in the office is at fault for this. We are also dealing with issues that were started years and years and years and years ago. And it's just the fact that it was Dave Thomas and his group, small little office, working on typewriters. It just did not grow at the times, and we did not get the right kind of structure set up to grow to the size we are. And part of that is not being compliant with reporting income from various states. So that is, I think, my personal greatest concern that needs to be addressed so we can stay legal. It was very, very embarrassing last year when it was uncovered that USPSA didn't even exist as a nonprofit because somebody wasn't filing the right paperwork in Delaware. That's mortifying to me as a businessman. Mortifying. So that kind of cracked the door open. Well, let's look into this a little bit further. And then you realize, oh, wait a minute. We have not filed all of these reports. And I can say, I don't know if this, I mean, like I say, this conversation like this, even though they need to be made and had, doesn't make the organization look good. But the organization is not making itself look good because it's not doing what it's supposed to be doing. We can point fingers, but again, people that are currently in place did not create this problem. They're stuck with it. If there are so many other issues, that my priorities are not necessarily going to be their priorities or other people on the board's priorities. I want us to be compliant in our reporting to the states. Anytime you take revenue from a state, you have to report to that state that you took that revenue. Being a nonprofit, you won't have to pay taxes on it, but you still have to report it. Very standard. It's just a one-page document, usually done online, and click of a button, you're done. It's never been done. And so that's kind of what that Alabama thing was last year. Wasn't handled correctly, and then at the same time, it wasn't explained to the membership why. Nobody's trying to move the corporation. Nobody's trying to steal it. No, it was realizing that this corporation, even though it's nonprofit, still has to register in every state that it draws income from as a foreign entity. That's just a standard bookkeeping thing. And then if you derive income, which is match fees and membership dues from that state, that's income from that state and it has to be reported. Nonprofits, you're not going to pay taxes on it, but it still has to be reported. Franchise tax reports, things like that. It's just standard bookkeeping stuff. We have a CPA. We have an audit committee. We were paying an auditor. None of this was uncovered in the last 40 years of the organization. That's embarrassing. And I don't know if I'm the first person to bring this up. I doubt it. But I think this needs to be handled and it needs to be a priority. It's actually a pretty easy fix. There are companies out there that you can hire that handle nonprofits specifically to do just this task. And then we're legal. We're compliant.
So, Ken, why do you think the organization is so shy about putting out statements to the members of what's actually going on instead of allowing this stuff to fester and turn into 100 conspiracy theories?
I think they're embarrassed. I think nobody likes to be the bearer of bad news. Nobody wants to say things that make the company look bad. My background and being coming out of the kitchen, and if you watch enough shows, the Gordon Ramsays of the world, we don't give a shit. All we care about is getting the end product on the table to the customer, and that is perfect. We don't care about your feelings. We don't care about anything other than getting it right. So let's get it right. And if your little ego gets bruised, so what? Get it right. It doesn't mean we have to be ugly. It does not mean we have to call each other names. We might throw a pan or two, but we're there to get the job done. And that needs to be the mentality. And we don't have that mentality. And we need to have it. And again, that kind of what makes me the outlier. And the board loving the fact that I'm out here taking all this heat. And they don't have to. I would love to know how many area directors call their section coordinators. I've been calling my section coordinators and club contacts. I've had two of them say, you know what? In all the years I've been in the organization, you're the first area director that's ever called me. Thank you. That's embarrassing to me, but I'll let everybody know that's the job. Done. By the way, there's no manual. That's one of the things that we're working on. And I'll give big kudos to Area 1 Director Jim Boone for recognizing what we all knew and what we've heard from other people and previous directors is there's no handbook. There's no process. There are no real programs in place outside of the Range Officer Institute. And I don't know what Jake's doing. And I know Troy, I think, you know, Troy is Troy, but that department is, I like the way that department is ran. The rest of it, there is no handbook. There's no handbook for us area directors. There is no lock, or what we call a change log. There is nothing that's telling us, okay, this is why we're doing what we're doing. This is what we tried. It didn't work. Here's what we want to try. What are the outcomes? None of those are happening. We don't have really good job descriptions for people. We have things that are in the bylaws, which is our constitution, and need to be tightly held to. If we don't like something in there, there's a process for changing it. You can't just vote on something just because you want to vote on it, and you can't change it willy-nilly just because you want to. There's a process. So what Jim's trying to do, and I want to help, is let's get these processes in place. But they have to be created. They have to be written up. They have to be discussed. They have to go through committee. They have to be voted on. So who we are is a small version of Congress, and it is a slow slog, horrendous slog. So when you're a man of action like myself, this is painful, but it is necessary.
Yeah, I get it. There are processes you have to, it's bureaucracy at its worst, I guess.
It is, but it does serve a place, and we need to have a book. We need to be able to go to Addendum 16 and pull it up and say, okay, here's where it comes from. We have a place to start. We just don't. We're reinventing the wheel every week, it seems like. And I don't like that.
I've had that conversation with Ye Men several times, and it's each one is about an hour in length. So I understand what you're saying. Now, I do want to hit on a couple other things before we run out of time.
Okay.
We had a brief conversation back and forth on Facebook. And one of the things you said was, I asked if you had made a post on social media back in January where you said, you know, we need bylaws changes, the board needs to be fixed and all this other stuff. And I said, well, what has changed since then? And you said you saw behind the green curtain. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, that's a really, I saw behind the green curtain, right? And there's sorry about moving the phone there. I had to put the charger on.
Okay.
I didn't mean to do that. Make everybody dizzy. All right. When you become an area director, you obviously sign a confidentiality agreement, which is really important. You also take on a mantle of fiduciary responsibility. And apparently there's multiple definitions of fiduciary responsibility.
There is.
But the first duty is always to the organization. So just because I personally want to see something really change, I can't always act upon that because that's not necessarily in compliance with my first duty and my fiduciary responsibilities. I'm not being hypocritical. If this organization does not fix itself and we cannot do what needs to be done to right this ship, then let it sink, let it burn, let's build a new one. I have no problem saying that, but at least I'm willing to step up and try, have a conversation with my fellow board members, have a conversation with our members, and try to put processes in place to fix some of these things. It's not easy, and I'm being held accountable for stuff that happened 5, 6, 7 years ago, or even last year, that I wasn't a part of. Well, you did this. You did. I'm going, whoa, wait a minute. I wouldn't. No, I wasn't. And again, we don't have a handbook. We don't have a change log. How am I supposed to know what the discussions were? How am I supposed to know what the thought processes were? We don't. And it's like, you know, your start date, my start date was like March 6th. You were given no prior knowledge to March 6th. I wanted to see the bylaws, historical bylaws. We're locked out of that. Why? Nobody knows, but we are. He meant sent a message. Still hasn't been unlocked. I managed to find previous copies and the change log from the bylaws that were released to the members. Well, I have it. I'm looking at it, and I've sent it to other board members. At least we have something to look at. I'm not on the bylaws committee, but I still want to know what's going on and why things are the way they are.
Ken?
I'm not
disagreeing with you. Does that stand to a bigger problem of why are the board members being stonewalled?
Why are the board members being what? Say that word. I didn't understand that word.
Stonewalled.
I don't know that it's necessarily stonewalled. Jake has answered every question I've asked him. Troy has answered every question I've asked him. Donna has tried to answer every question I ask her. But there's a lot of things. She hadn't been in the position that long, and she'd kind of been thrown under the bus, really, because the processes were in place when she started, and she hasn't been given the proper guidance by the president, and both presidents, plural, and the incredible turnover on the board. That's what we need. And again, processes were not in place, so they have to be created. So when we say, hey, I want to see these numbers, and the numbers were not inputted correctly or categorized correctly, coded correctly, really hard. So like I said, they take all everybody's expenses and they throw it into one lump number, and you're going, well, American Express bill, X numbers of thousands of dollars. Well, we need to see the breakout. Where's the breakout? And then they'll break it out. And then they're like, well, that's still way too general and way too big of a number. Break it out even further. And then that is very hard to get done.
I understand that, but all this historical stuff that people have asked to see, and you can't see it. Like you just said, the bylaws. Why are you guys still locked out?
I don't know. Rick Brutzel was supposed to unlock it. He was out. Copied us on an email he sent to Rick to unlock it. We kept asking for it. I can't answer that question because I don't know.
Okay, fair enough. Now, you had mentioned in your Facebook Live that you want to delay the live stream of the board meetings. By that delay, do you mean like a 10-second delay like they have in TV so they can beep out cuss words, or are we talking a 24-hour delay?
Either one I'm fine with. I have my reasons. They're my reasons. You kind of want to... I have suspicions that the board meetings, even though they're obviously public, and when they were in person, you could come sit in the boardroom, but you had to be quiet. You could not be an active participant unless you were there to answer a question. What my suspicion is, based on watching the other previous live streams, is that there's participation going on behind the scenes. I can't prove it. So it's just an observation. And this, by delaying the live stream, we know that we can eliminate any outside influence to the directors at that meeting. In other words, nobody can be feeding them information. Nobody can be giving them talking points. None of that can happen. I don't want them edited. I don't want cuss words cut out. Release it in its entirety. I want the membership to sit through that 6.5-hour butt buster that all of us had to sit through. And you can't fast forward it. Share the pain, so to speak. A whole nother thing, we all agree we want to shorten our meetings. Nobody's trying to hide anything, but I don't want any undue influence during the discussion phase, which is really important. And believe it or not, I think live streaming hinders the discussion phase because nobody wants to look stupid. Nobody wants to look bad. So they're not willing to talk a lot on camera. I am, because I don't care. I'm not right. I'm wrong a lot, but at least I'm willing to admit it. And if somebody's got a better idea, I'll ride it. I'm not going to ride my horse all the way to the end of the road. I'll get on somebody else's horse. If you got a better plan, bring it. Bring it. Don't beat us up for trying. That's all I can say on that one. Okay, we'll do it. But there's some other issues. But
I appreciate your willingness to be candid in front of an audience. But if there are other board members that are unwilling to be candid, if they're not willing to speak publicly for their constituents to hear them, then they should not be there.
I'm not going to throw anyone under the bus, but there's nothing wrong with that. But not everybody's comfortable in front of a microphone or in front of an audience. I've been doing much of my career, so it's easy for me, but not everybody can do that.
But it'd be no different than being, if 100 people wanted to come in and sit and be quiet and just observe a board meeting, you know what I mean?
They can do that. And that's really all it's covered with. I asked Rick, so how many people are actually watching these things? He said, the highest number has been 130. So really it's not getting the reach I think people think is happening, that they're, if this is CNN breaking news. No, it's just a few. And there's also a real negative side that is creating a headache for the organization. And that's the negativity and the ugliness. People are people. Members do what they want, whatever. But when you attack directors and when you threaten directors and you threaten staff members, when you make fun of people and being ugly, there's no cause for that. And nobody wants to be part of it. And nobody wants to be the person being made fun of. That's just, especially our employees. And we as directors have a duty to protect our employees. And I don't want them exposed to that kind of scrutiny. They shouldn't have to be exposed to that kind of scrutiny or made fun of like this. And it's not cool. I don't know what we can do about it, but it is what it is. But I don't like it.
Well, you could give them the option of, I think Donna did it the last time, just turn the camera off where she's still there. You can still hear everything she says. There's just no camera on her where you just can't be seen. You know what I mean?
Right. That may have to happen. But at the same time, some people, and I don't know, I'm not speaking about anybody in particular. Some people are not comfortable knowing they hate public speaking. And that's the number one fear in the world is public speaking. And this is a version, a form of public speaking. Because once it is set, our conversation right now, it exists forever. It is going to be analyzed, scrutinized, beat up. He said this, but he meant this. Things are really blown out of context. And it makes it very hard. That people tell me, you really, really, really need to think two or three times before you say. I usually don't. And I should, but it's hard. I'm very passionate about the things I'm talking about and the things that I care about. And, consequences be damned, I'm going to say what I'm going to say. But not everybody feels that way. And at the same time, I don't like how members think it's okay to harass and make fun of other directors, us directors, and staff members, and other members of the sport. And social media has become a very negative thing. And it shouldn't be that. We should be propping each other up. We should be helping solve problems. We should be working toward common solutions and common goals, but we're not, because it's easier to knock things down. It's easier to make fun of people. Oh, look at that shirt he's wearing. Oh my God, is that a booger hanging out of somebody's nut? Oh my God, did he just swallow a loogie? I mean, it's childish. We need to be a little more professional.
It goes both ways too, because I've heard of two board members who acted out at matches, and I've heard of an employee who acted out and yelled at an individual at a match as they were preparing to shoot. So it goes both ways, you know, Ken?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And those actions, if they get to that level, a discipline committee has been formed. It is brand new. Ben Berry is the chairman of that committee. It's still a work in process. It will be a work in process until we start seeing things happen. And members will be held accountable. Directors will be held accountable. The president will be held accountable for words and actions. We all have to adhere to an agreed upon set of standards so that we may interact with each other safely. Nobody should ever fear going to an event. And we're at that point now. And people are afraid to come to an event for fear of being accosted, for fear of being called out, all kinds of reasons. And nobody should ever be made to feel that way.
Well, I would say being called out is different than the other stuff.
Depending on how it's done. You can go up to somebody and say, hey, you know, I know you said this. I don't really like it. Can we talk about it? Okay. But you don't really get to go up to somebody, hey, motherfucker, you're a piece of shit, and I think you should die. No, you really shouldn't do that. And that's what we're doing. That's what's happening.
I mean, that's verbal assault.
A little bit of an extreme, but it is verbal assault. But it's technically not illegal. It's harassment. We've had harassment cases that have been brought before law enforcement. Law enforcement says, well, that's harassment. That's not illegal. It's civil, but not criminal. And so that's one of the reasons why our board meetings are going so long right now. A lot of time is having to be spent dealing with these type of harassment issues and how we resolve them. I gotta wrap this up because I'm late for my hearing appointment to get my hearing aids adjusted. And I'll just come back on. Don't let me. I enjoy having these conversations. I'm not afraid to talk to people. You know, just don't misconstrue my message. That's the most important thing I can tell people.
All right. Well, I appreciate you coming on, and we'll finish this as soon as we can.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate you taking the time, David.
Thank you, Ken. Have a good one.
All right. Bye-bye. Thank you. Bye.
Until next time.
Don't be a little bitch.
Yeah.